Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I hope you all had a great weekend. We will go ahead and kind of give everyone just a few minutes to join. Samuel, Justin, you have anything interesting from this weekend? Maybe a joke to tell while we're waiting?
Well, I was entertaining us with jokes before, so
Yes, you are. You have a lot.
yeah, let's dress the weekend. Memorial Day, always a special holiday. Remember those that have
Yes.
done what they could to help everybody around the world. So it's a good holiday. It's also a good time to get together with
Really
family
great.
and friends. Yeah, I got a joke. So what did one math book say to the other? I'm full of problems. It's good times. Samuel, how was your weekend?
was all right. I just worked on catching up on work because I've been traveling on trainings and conferences the past month, really.
Real busy. All right. Our lovely Shireen with Intea, she has put up our first poll, or she's about to put up our first poll. She's helping us behind the scenes. We'll have three polls throughout this webinar. So if you can see that, go ahead and help us out, answer those polls. All right, let's get started. Well, originally, this was a webinar between Justin and I discussing out with the old and in with the new on upgrading your inspection database. But we had a really great live stream last week with Samuel in Georgia. And so we asked him to join us again and give some great perspective as an owner user. We are live. Justin and I are currently in the great state of Texas, and Samuel is joining us from our good friend next door, Louisiana. Please feel free to ask any questions throughout this session. We'd really love y'all's engagement. Let's go ahead and get with our agenda and some introductions. So we're going to be discussing, out with the old and with the new, the issues, the solutions, how to transition, and cost benefits. I am Angela Saldivar, Antea's Asset Integrity and Risk-Based Inspection Specialist. I have been in the industry for over 10 years working in asset integrity. I've worked in many different platforms and even spreadsheets as well. And I've been a part of several implementation projects from start to finish and part of managing assets within those platforms. I've been with Antea for just a little over a year now. Really love the company, really great people. Go ahead, Justin.
Well, thank you, Angela. Thanks for introducing yourself. And also, Samuel, Angela, thank you again for the time to share again. It's been about a week since we chatted. I'm happy to chat some more. So I'm Justin Dayrud. I have about 15 years of asset integrity, mechanical integrity experience in oil and gas, petrochemical, upstream, downstream, midstream, et cetera. My experience is largely from a consultancy perspective. So I bring the consultant's point of view when it comes to asset integrity databases, as well as, how do us solutions providers kind of approach this out with the old and in with the new perspective. So I've got a lot of things to add, and I'm hoping we have a really nice conversation. And I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and asking questions and answering the poll.
Thank you, Justin. All right, Samuel, you're up.
All right, well, I'm Samuel. I've been working only on the owner-operator side so far, and been in various roles within the mechanical integrity space in refining and chemicals. So right now I'm responsible for the mechanical integrity program at my current facility, Lotte Chemical, over in Westlake, Louisiana. And I've also worked in prior roles with asset integrity management and IDMS upgrades. Learned a lot of what to do, what not to do, and I'm applying the majority of what to do at my facility here at Lotte. And my background is primarily metallurgy and corrosion, but with risk-based inspection, that naturally leads into the rest of the asset integrity management as well.
Thanks so much, Samuel. Thanks for joining us again last minute.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Right, so that first thing on our agenda, the issues. So we have some really good bullet points here. Maybe we can elaborate on some of them.
Sure.
Justin.
I'll go ahead and kind of kick us off as far as what the issues are. So we're talking out with the old and with the new. What does that really mean? So from my side of things, I get a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, et cetera, from organizations all throughout. And they're saying, hey, we have a spreadsheet, or we have a asset integrity software, an IDMS, you know, inspection database of some sort that we aren't able to get all of our data into. We can't get our data out. There's a reporting issues, et cetera. What are your suggestions? Could you come in and help us, et cetera? So one of the things when I'm starting to learn more about these situations with the organizations is I ask a lot of questions. You know, what do you mean? How are you working with the database? What is the database? What are you trying to achieve, et cetera? And a lot of the same themes keep popping up. They have potentially out of date software, something that was great maybe 20 years ago, maybe even 15 years ago that, you know, has just kind of sat around and done its thing. But now with where we are in technology, where we are with applications being able to talk to each other, some of those older databases are either kind of showing how old they are, or they're becoming discontinued and owner operators are being asked to upgrade to the new version. So what does that really mean? It gives the owner operators kind of an opportunity and a perspective to look at what is their current database and what is out there in the market, as well as to look at, hey, what kind of technology or information will help us extract a lot more value from our organization within within those new tools and whatnot. So it's nice to have Samuel here to kind of give us that owner user perspective. So, you know, I see it from the consultancy side. We're asking to solve a lot of problems, but I'm not the one bringing problems to others. So Samuel, what's your perspective on this?
Well, yeah, as an owner operator, like a math textbook full of problems. So at my previous facility, one of the problems was the different applications we were using. So we had an IDMS. Actually, we had several IDMS systems throughout the various facilities within the organization. And then on top of that, we had a different management system for our risk-based inspection data, and then we had a different system for the planning of those inspections. So three different systems of differing types throughout an organization that really needed to merge into one and in a more stable platform, because a couple of those systems were Access databases, which Access databases are great. I use them all the time, but they're not enterprise scale for most applications. So we had to get that going. And then at my current facility, the big problem was we had a software initially, and that software promised a lot, like, oh, we can make your IDMS, we can make your RBI, and they just didn't deliver on any of it. So we had to research and look elsewhere until we found a company that provided everything that we needed. And so really the key takeaway with the issue, like, yeah, a lot of software is coming out of date, but at the end of the day, what is the owner operator trying to get out of it? And in my current role, what we wanted to get out of it is we wanted the ability to integrate into other systems such as SAP, and the ability to meet all of our regulatory needs as we set up our inspection program and risk-based inspection.
Yeah, that's definitely touches on all those things when it comes to your issues and whatnot. I'm assuming from your owner operator experience, did you ever have issues with like data continuity and or finding things within the existing tools? Did it take a lot of time and effort to go out and search for data? So we're trying to extract value, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. So at the previous facility there were a lot of data minutiae errors, but luckily, you know, with different data types and whatnot, things stored as text, things stored as numbers that shouldn't have been, and, you know, minor typographical errors. And luckily they had a team of people attacking it. So when you're a large organization, that's definitely feasible, and you can definitely have a lot of checks and balances with the data integrity. And but at my current facility, we had a very, very large challenge with getting the data all situated and put together. So it ended up being quite a challenge, a lot of manual work, and to make sure that the data was correct. And I really did end up combing through all the PNIDs to make sure everything was correct. So there's a lot of different approaches, but at the end of the day, you have to have good data to work with, because once it's established, it becomes very difficult to change, even though it may appear simple in concept, especially when you have integrations.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I definitely love that you discuss all those different data silos, because that's a major issue that we see in facilities, is that maintenance has, their stuff, and then operations has their stuff, and then being able to put everything into one place that everybody can access is definitely good.
Yeah, and everybody wants to integrate these days.
Yeah. All right, so move into our next slide, discussing now those solutions with some of those issues. What does that look like?
Yeah, definitely. So we just talked about an assortment of problems and or issues that an ordinary operator may face. From the consultant side, we're gonna obviously suggest solutions, and us being, asset integrity professionals, corrosion engineers, et cetera, we have access to a lot of different softwares and a lot of different solutions, but the main themes are consistent. It's really coming down to, if you have an older or out of date software, well, let's go ahead and update everything. Let's update your database. Let's get your data that is valuable out of that older software, get it into a new database. If the system is being discontinued and individuals are going out and they're checking the market for different things, people like ourselves, even the other software providers, provide perspective on what you may be looking for and can provide context around those solutions. For instance, if you're looking for an RBI solution, are you looking for something that is fully quantitative all the time, or are you looking for something that is more of a hybrid approach, semi-quantitative, is flexible to your needs, all those types of things. And then really, when it comes down to the transition, and we'll touch on this more in the webinar, is how do you actually transition, and how do you move towards something that's different than what you currently have? So from my side of things, there is a different assortment of approaches that you can take. It all involves data, it all involves decisions, and it all involves a lot of different people.
That's great.
Yeah. So my previous facility and this facility, the decision, of course, was to transition to a more innovative database, because we at the previous facility, of course, wanted to integrate and also integrate into other aspects such as, SAP and potentially establish IOWs and whatnot with the data historian. And then our current facility, our main integration was with SAP, but we wanted to leave the door open for IOWs later. So that way we can establish well within our risk-based inspection program different operating limits and be aware of any changes. And that's one of those things of breaking down the data silos in a meaningful way. Everybody talks about integration, but you have to know what you want to integrate in order to get any value out of it. And of course, there was always the option to update and maintain the current database. And that was an option that we explored at my previous facility. But ultimately, that company was not able to deliver on the changes that we wanted in the future. The IDMS side, it probably would have worked out. But if they wanted for the risk-based inspection and for the IOW side of things, it would not have worked out. So ultimately we had to innovate. And I think that's the direction that a lot of other owner operators I know are taking, because we want those options for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And talking a little bit and leaning on my experience, I worked with an organization that had their own software tool, and we would have customers come to us and say, hey, we'd like to add this feature. We'd like to add this integration capability. It's not that it wasn't possible for us to do it. It's just we were working with a technology that maybe wasn't as flexible. And so we would try to offer those types of solutions, but ultimately that solution was just a fix and not necessarily a feature. And so those feature pieces really extract more value in a lot of the scenarios, but sometimes a fix is okay.
Really great points. So what's next? How do you transition? And we'll also have our second poll as well.
So transitioning, all right, from the consultant side of things and helping work with organizations, there is a long list of what you want to try to do as far as a project execution and managing that entire transitional process. And I think first and foremost, if you see that top bullet point, not only do you want to have the right team in place, but from a consultant side, you have to make sure that you have the right team delivering the services and delivering the solutions. If your team doesn't understand what the owner user is trying to do, you can't help them reach those goals unless you have the right people in the right place to ensure that those goals will be met. Because that is your job, mm-hmm. as the consultant, as a service provider. We take personal value in helping our customers find a solution. And if we don't know that solution and we don't understand it, how are we going to help them get there? Mm-hmm. And Samuel, I don't know if you want to talk about the first bullet point we talked about.
Yeah, so the first bullet point.
He's very passionate about that first one.
I'm very passionate about the first one. Having the right people in the right place is how you make anything happen and be successful at it. So forming the right team is very important. Anybody on this call that's IT, you know, don't take any offense, but you know, certain things like with asset integrity management and risk-based inspection, they shouldn't be handled by an IT manager. This is not a mm-hmm. IT pet project. This is how the organization will manage their assets. And so ultimately you need what fits within the organization and how they want to manage assets. So this is the start of pretty much all the don'ts in any transition of software for inspection or asset integrity. So at my previous role, it was left in charge to project people and IT people who didn't really fully understand. You for one, got to have the end user perspective, because if that software does not meet the end user needs, they're going to either find workarounds or they're just going to hate it, and you're going to lose a lot of productivity. You're going to lose a lot of value that you could have gained with the software. And then also having people that truly understand the problem and what the business objective is. And that's usually why you don't want an IT person in charge of it. You usually want somebody who's familiar with asset integrity and familiar as an end user with the features that you want. You know, like with some softwares, you may end up having to click 40 times to get to what you need. And that's, I don't think anybody really likes that. And then with other softwares, if you can't find what you need, or if you have to have excessive searching, you really got to have the end user and the people that understand the problem. That's the first step, the key step. Everything else falls into place afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the team is really important. And, you know, working with an owner user that has the right composition of individuals, has the right experience and really knows what they're looking for, one, being honest, can be a big pain because they are very pointed in exactly what they wanted. And us mm-hmm. as consultants, we obviously want to be flexible to what we can deliver and those types of things. But it's also a breath of fresh air because they know what they want versus they don't necessarily have the right team composition to understand that it's the right needs and the right wants. So working with a team that is strong and is cross-dimensional, so to speak, is really, really good in aligning and ensuring that you reach those goals. Also from the consultant side of things, it helps us be focused and pointed as we go through the execution of a project. Mm-hmm. And I just realized I had this on my desk, but you know, flowcharts, processes, those types of things makes this a whole lot easier when we know that the end of that goal actually makes sense. So in talking about the goal, and that's kind of our second bullet point, identifying a solution mm-hmm. that aligns with an intended goal. Now there's organizations that are massive, right? That have big goals, big wants. We want full integration with this, that, and the other. But there's also the smaller organizations. They have one, two facilities. Maybe they just have an assortment of small, upstream assets, et cetera. They're just looking for something that's a solution outside of a spreadsheet. I think having goals shaped to match what the organization's needs are really important, as well as the size of the organization. And that comes down to a really important, I guess, piece that we don't really have here is scalability, right?
Yes.
So if you have one size of a facility that had really nothing, just spreadsheets, you know, inspection reports, some, you know, shared drive somewhere with a whole bunch of data, well, what happens when that organization potentially gets merged with another organization that's a lot larger, right? There's a scalability piece. How do you take that data and move it to another aspect of it? And Samuel, I don't know if you have some experience or some perspective on this, but that scalability piece is key, I think.
Yeah, the scalability my previous job, every different facility within the organization kind of did their own thing, and merging into one unified system was a big change and a big endeavor. So ultimately, I didn't envy them with the whole project, because it was definitely on a massive scale. But scalability was really important, and also with Lotte, that was what led us to select our IDMS platform, because we have one facility right now, but our goal is to have multiple facilities and potentially even global later on with the rest of the Lotte chemical facilities abroad. So that was an important aspect that really came down to some of the smaller software companies that we couldn't end up using, because they weren't able to scale or grow, or weren't able to support some of the features that we needed. So that's a really important aspect, and ultimately some owner operators, if they're small, they plan on staying small, they may not have to have those go big or go home goals or features for the future. But if a company plans on growing and plans on integrating even more, you have to make sure that the software company will grow with the company, either in the integrations that they want or with the size and different facilities.
Yeah, very good point. And we've talked about data integrity several times, and we've even brought it up just recently. When it comes to the scalability and transitioning and those types of things, obviously you want to grab whatever data is relevant and the right data. But maybe this is maybe a different, taking a left turn, from the owner operator perspective, if you have the right data and the right software tool or in the right database, how does that support from a auditing side of things? An insurance company comes in and potentially does your audits, or you have an OSHA audit or whatever. Can you talk about that piece, Samuel?
Yeah, so that was actually an issue that I ran into recently. So the data integrity is absolutely paramount. You have to make sure that the assets are the right name. You have to make sure that they have the right inspection schedule, because otherwise you may end up being overdue when you thought you were fine. And at most facilities, it's pretty easy to comb through the PHA or the PNID to see what kind of assets that an auditor is going to want to look at. So one aspect is part of the Lotte facilities, we have almost like sub, we call them skid packages, where they were in scope of the original project, but they were built by a separate company and came in on a skid. And so they were this little black box of information, and we generally knew what they were called, but sometimes it had a little nuance to it. So instead of following the normal naming conventions of like E1028, it would be like BE1028. And so that ran into a couple different issues, because on some of them we had duplicate names, so we had to adjust that. And luckily an auditor didn't find that one. So I found that one. So I fixed that and got that adjusted. And you know, but that's one of those things where, you know, that one was a small little seal cooler that will never have an internal inspection ever, because you can't fit it, you can barely fit a hand in there. So then the actual E1028 is a huge piece of equipment that will have an internal, and so that would you know, had we not really combed through all the data to make sure everything was ship shape, that could have been an audit nightmare down the road.
Yeah,
and I also want to add that this is something that can't be rushed. the data integrity and combing through data. That's something that they're like, oh, we're just going to, we want everything in at this time, at this time, at this time. And they rush that process and it ends up biting them later on, you know, so
yeah, and I
definitely
would be,
don't want to rush that.
Definitely. And I would be, you know, I would ask the audience if they're able to chime into the chat or whatever, but I would assume the data piece is probably the scariest mountain to climb when it comes to transitioning things. Right. And so, you know, I was just talking with a customer recently about their piping and, you know, their process piping and utility piping and all that stuff. Piping is what 60%, I think, whichever poll or whatever, 60% of our failures in the mechanical integrity industry. But piping tends to get overlooked. It tends to not have as much, you know, data collection done on it or managing and optimizing a piping and inspection program. You know, sometimes starting from scratch is the best way to go, because you might have a whole bunch of legacy piping data that is there, but you still don't know what to do with it. And you don't know why, you know, this piping circuit was named this way or why these damage mechanisms aren't applying or they do apply. And it is a data mountain to climb, but it is also a really good exercise because it helps you reformulate what you're doing, what your goals are, and where your optimization may be with your piping system circuits, et cetera. And I don't know from your side, Samuel, where you guys are with your piping program and those types of things, but can you touch base on the piping?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, before I came to Lotte, actually, we had hired a company that to do the circuitization for us. So that way, instead of going by individual lines, I think we have some 30,000 different line IDs between the two units to get that into manageable chunks. And ultimately it did not deliver. That company did not deliver. We fired them because we have 30,000 lines and somehow we got 10,000 circuits out of that. I don't want to manage 10,000 circuits when I only have about maybe 800 total fixed assets. 10,000 circuits is just not manageable. So ultimately I had to just redo it from scratch, and we ended up at, let's see, what's 160 plus 450, so ended up being around 600 total total circuits, which is more than manageable, especially from an inspection standpoint. It should be, you know, somewhat close to the amount of fixed assets you have, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but it shouldn't be 10 times more. So so that was one of those things. And then you know, my previous facility, like we went through a couple of different recircuitization efforts, but luckily we had the data mapped in a way to where it's pretty easy to say, okay, this CML, it used to belong to this circuit, we recircuitized this and now it belongs to another circuit. So that part was a little bit easier to manage, but I do agree that sometimes starting from scratch is the best option, because the previous effort may have been done by the wrong team, but hopefully you speaking to the audience there, whoever's in the right team are able to make that call. Whether do you scrap the crap that came before you, or do you start anew?
Yep, and that's
very good point.
Definitely good perspective for sure. Yeah, just touching on your number of circuits real quick, I think that is pretty much right on. Some organizations, depending on the type of facility and whatnot, may have, you know, two times more circuits than the number of fixed equipment, but others may have less. And then if you go with a corrosion loop perspective and managing your loops per se, you'll have definitely less than your fixed equipment. So good perspective.
Now going kind of to the database mapping in the right locations, that's kind of like your field, Justin, more of my field as well, and what that looks like.
Yeah, and this is an interesting song and dance, so to speak. So if you're taking a discontinued software or an older software that, you know, has data kind of fit into places where data shouldn't have been, for instance, if you're using a tool and people have been around and several different organizations within that facility, or excuse me, several different facilities within that organization have tried to utilize the tool in different ways, you might find the exact same data in 15 different fields, or you might have 15 different types of data in the same field. So when you're looking at it from a database side of things and you're trying to get that into a new tool, you not only have to map the data correctly, but you have to verify if that data was intended for the right reason and used for the right reason. For instance, equipment description very benign field. You expect it to be just the description of the equipment. I have a knockout drum. But other individuals or other facilities used it as how to name the circuits in their RBI program, for instance, you know, bottom of X drum or whatever. And if we took all that data and we put it in the exact same spot in the new software, then it's erroneous. We don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to deal with it. And it's completely jumbled across the entire organization. So mm-hmm. when you're mapping data fields, it's not just saying, okay, equipment ID equals equipment ID or diameter equals diameter. You have to have context around it to ensure that you're not creating that data mess that Samuel was talking about having to go back and clean. So data mapping is really, really key.
Yes, we've went through this recently. You know, also I see down here we have creating workflows, which you discussed, you know, also procedures, training, all of that really, really important.
Mm-hmm. And the, and yeah, on the training piece, a lot of people like to throw everybody in the same training course, right? But our roles are different. You know, mm-hmm. what an inspection group might want to be trained on is completely different than the management side of things, right? So training has to be tailored to the right individuals that form the right team, that the top bullet point of this slide. So yeah, there's an overview, how to use a software, how to use a tool, how to use a workflow, but there's also a targeted training that needs to be mm-hmm. generated so that, you know, the right people get the right value out of the same tool.
That's a great point.
Yeah, and those were definitely things that I faced as well, because with the naming convention, that that can get real weird sometimes, especially with at my previous facility where we had the risk-based inspection being separate from the IDMS and naming components and the description of the components. Sometimes components got very, very, very descriptive, whereas the component in the IDMS would just be nozzle. So yeah. Very simple.
Yeah.
And yeah, with that, with the training and whatnot and the workflows, sometimes as an owner operator, you have to make a choice. Do you pay and configure the software to match your organizational workflow, or do you change your workflow to match the software? That's a balancing act. And mm-hmm. and luckily in general, most of the softwares have, you know, some degree of configurability with it. But if you have to go out of left field doing something that that no other owner operator is really doing, you have to really, as an owner operator, decide, do I stick with my current workflow, or do I change myself?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's a good point.
I think there has to be flexibility on both sides, to be frank. Mm-hmm.
Something definitely to look for, flexibility. All right, money. Everybody wants to talk about cost benefits.
Yeah.
So, this is how you easily convince management.
Right?
So Samuel brought up a really good point earlier, you know, does it take you 40 clicks to get to the one piece of information that you need, or is it 3 or 4, right? Mm-hmm. If you take that over 10 pieces of equipment and you're trying to find the same piece of information, that's 400 clicks. How long does it take you just to sit with your mouse and go 400 clicks, right? Compared to 40. So mm-hmm. just the navigation piece, it's very hard to quantify what that benefit may be for the usability of a tool, but it comes out in the wash because you're able to do things more efficiently. Mm-hmm. When you transition from a database, let's say you had a purely just an inspection database or purely just a database holding data, and you get it into, you move into a new organizational database that has better features. So RBI, IOWs, you know, has a way of storing your corrosion and damage mechanisms, et cetera. You're able to start transitioning and making decisions a lot quicker and easier within those databases, which then allow you to take advantage of RBI, where people have shown, and you can look at all the published stuff, all the things that are out there and, you know, websites or on magazines and all that stuff. People have seen savings of up to 80% in just their inspection savings because they're taking money out of their inspection budget and they're putting it into the equipment that really needed the inspection, that really needed the integrity engineering, the fitness for services, et cetera, versus the other 80% of their equipment that, you know what, we don't have to spend that much money to go in inside and see that this equipment's fine, that we have no mm-hmm. damage mechanisms, that we have lower corrosion rates, that we have a way to monitor online instead of shutting down half the plant just to look at these equipment that we know are going to be okay.
And not to mention the safety risks of confined space when you really don't have to and you know the answer. And that's especially true in PSM facilities, especially with fairly non-corrosive services. Mm-hmm. Do we send people in to go look at something, or do we just stick a UT point on it because we understand the corrosion? And the cost benefit for risk-based inspection, very easy to quantify. But then there's also the benefit of maintaining compliance, because while most OSHA or EPA auditors won't come in and just shut you down and tell you to press the master stop button, but it may come in the form of fines. It may come in the form of a formalized gap closure plan. Can come through, consent decrees, all sorts of different things. So maintaining compliance is absolutely a cost benefit, because it'll bite you in the ass if you don't maintain compliance.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always a reactive thing, right? So when the individuals or the organizations that tend to get hit with the compliance issues, they knew they had issues and they knew they would get bit, right? But they mm-hmm. were reactive to those issues instead of being proactive.
Very good point.
And not to mention the licensing costs of the software. So with a heritage system, you may have been overpaying for, it may have been the cream of the crop 20 years ago, but 20 years ago was a really long time ago. And so that license may be, you may have been overpaying, and software with more features, more support may end up costing less. And the various softwares that you could choose, they have a very wide range of license costs, and also how you do the license on internal server, external server, that kind of deal as well. So you may see costs with just the software alone.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, because Justin, we did discuss how a lot of facilities feel like they're cost sunk with certain softwares, and how do they come back from that? And looking at the licensing, that's kind of a starting point, I think, as well.
For sure. And Samuel mentioned it last week on our live stream. Mm-hmm. What Samuel just talked about as far as your license costs and the legacy thing, I completely understand, because if you have a 10-year-old software, you're still paying your high license cost, but that software hasn't really adapted or evolved over those 10 years. Yeah, it's got some new features and fixes and stuff, but it's not, overly adding value to other application interfaces that you need to add after 10 years. So that's a really good point. Maybe it should shrink, with that 10-year licensing if you're not adding features.
Very good point. And also, are they charging you every time you have to upgrade?
Right.
Those are some things to also look at.
Exactly.
All right. Well, any questions? Hoping to see. Can y'all see the chat, Samuel?
Yeah, I can see the chat.
We are opening the floor for questions right now.
Okay. We have somebody coming in, attending from Argentina. Hello, Argentina. Hola.
I think it's Matias.
That's cool. There was a question about a training certificate. Awesome.
The training certificate, we haven't really thought about that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something we can think about.
Yeah, and our hope was to get some questions here and there, but I have a question for Samuel, just thinking about it from an owner-operator perspective as well as a consultant. So what things are you looking for in consultants or outside expertise to support you as an owner-user when it comes to a transition of a database like this?
Yeah, so as far as consultancy, the main thing we look for is competency, because not everybody's equal. And with the first batch of consultants that kind of came in and tried to set everything up, we found a lot of gaps and a lot of issues, and so we just decided to scrap it all and start from scratch, and we ended up with a better product. So when it comes to consultancy, you have to be careful, make sure that they have the experience, the knowledge base, you know, are they on any API committees if you're in a refining or downstream, are they did they used to be a owner operator and now they've moved into consulting? So have they faced the problems? What are their results? What are their clients like? With inspection, it's pretty easy. Inspection is kind of a fairly niche field. Everybody knows everybody in the field of inspection. And if somebody doesn't know somebody, they know someone that does. So it's pretty easy to call somebody up and say and figure out whether the consultant is blowing smoke up your ass or not. So that's the primary thing with looking for a competency, and that's why that's why you have to be careful, because consultants, they can no offense, Justin, but sometimes they can end up costing a lot of money and not providing a lot of value. But there are also consultants that really are able to provide value, provide perspective. Maybe the consultant is able to finally convince management of this one thing that you've been thinking about for a while. So they can definitely come in handy, because for some reason managements love to listen to consultants and not their own people. So yeah. So there's good and bad, but ultimately, as the owner operator, you have to just select hopefully the good. And luckily with Justin here, this dude exudes competency. So I had a consultancy need, I would hire him.
That wasn't the point of my question, but I appreciate it. Thank you, Samuel.
Yeah, but also with software. Oh, let's see. Question for Samuel. We have a couple questions now. So
yes, Sergio, with how do you manage data integrity during a transition? Some things can be lost and fitting. Certain data can be difficult to match from one platform to another. Samuel, you're going
absolutely
to do this.
So yeah, one thing to look at is to look at the data types and how they have it. So I think Justin brought up a great point with equipment description. Seems very benign. It's not. and we ran into that. So you have to have sometimes adding a field for equipment title being what the actual description normally is. So like knockout pot is knockout pot, and with circuit it's just piping circuit. But then under maybe called in the description title, and then calling the description a description, where you have basically a free for all with how many ever characters you want, and maybe title being restricted in characters to an actual just what it is. And that comes a lot more into play with piping, because piping is very, very hard to describe. You just describe everything as piping circuit. What does this circuit actually mean without looking at the PNID or just knowing the circuits by heart? And then with data integrity, also your object types, do you have coding for it? Do you need to change the coding for it? Does the coding system make sense with the different equipment that you want? So right now in the IDMS that Lotate selected, we are only putting fixed piping and PSVs in there. So we only need fixed piping and PSVs. But what if we needed to put a compressor or a piece of rotating equipment in there? Would we be able to manage that? So with a lot of data integrity, you have to make sure that you have to get the load sheets from the software company, for one. And from those load sheets, you can determine how your data is going to be. So a lot of times you're going to have to export to Excel and whatnot to put into the load sheet. And so that moving out of Excel and moving into another Excel sheet and then putting it into a new software, you can get some errors. And that's why you just got to have checks and balances. That's why it's important to have make sure everything has a unique identification. So like for instance with that way you can use simple Excel functions to compare and check like VLOOKUP and whatnot. Pro tip in Excel, VLOOKUP will only give the first response once it finds something. So that's why you need to have everything being a unique identifier, so that way it's easy to compare. Otherwise you got to become an index match guru, and that runs into its own problems. Yep. And usually with that, you can find simple things like the trim function. If your assets have an extra space or in front of or behind the first and last characters, that's an easy mismatch that can be easily rectified. So you see those things, and conditional formatting makes it a little bit easier.
Sorry to jump in. I just wanted to touch on Sergio's question as well, data integrity and transition and all that. I think from my perspective, it's also important to have someone that knows what the previous database and the intent was, and what, you know, what the data was entered in certain forms and aspects, and then having someone that knows about the new database, right? And having those people work together. So for instance, diameter in a previous component might have been outside diameter for some reason, but diameter in the new asset integrity software or database might be inside diameter, right? So the old software might have taken your wall thickness and your outside diameter and figured out what the inside diameter was, while the new software is just inside diameter. So there's certain contexts and things that need to occur. And how do you manage that process? It's all about what are your goals and how do you ensure that you have data integrity throughout, and you set those stage gates and you put the people together to help solve those problems.
And I can say also, as an owner operator, we definitely misuse software and for not its intended purpose, because if you need a data field and OD is open and you aren't using OD for anything else right now, I can use that for other data if I want to. So you may end up with something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So that's another thing you have to look out for, and knowing the end users there may be able to help you, like, oh yeah, I do that. You're not supposed to, but you know, that's what they do.
Yeah. Samuel, you do have another question.
Does your IDMS software have the capability to initiate a work order as a result of visual inspection? Yes, it does. So it does have a function that's integrated into SAP based on inspection recommendations. And we do have although we do make sure there is an approval step for that, because sometimes if a visual inspection says, oh, this, caulking needs a little bit of work, you know, we're not necessarily going to submit a work order to go redo caulking on insulation unless we see a significant problem with it. Whereas, you know, other things where it's just like, oh, this thing is actively leaking, it's like, well, of course we're going to submit a work order for that.
I hope so.
And then I see here, what are methods to adopt to rectify the errors in legacy data? I feel like that could be a webinar in itself, but maybe we can say something really quick about that, Justin.
Well, I mean, if you have errors in your legacy data, how deep do those errors go, right? So if your data is wrong or incorrect or in the wrong spot, mm-hmm. you might have to do an audit of the legacy data to understand the extent of those errors. And then to move forward, you might have to have a specific effort or program to address those errors before you get it into the new software, right? Because you don't want to transfer bad data. And if you do transfer bad data, at least have a way to address that, those data issues.
Yes. And then thanks so
much,
Justin.
You can always do a bunch of Excel foo to see what some errors are. And if the errors are integral to the system, as in like it was just wrong to begin with, those are hard to correct. But if it's minor errors, like, oh, there's an extra space after every single asset, that's easy to correct. Is there software options with integrated drawings with CML? Sometimes the clients get something labeled, and when you look into what it is, the component is sometimes indistinguishable. So that one, yes, quite a few software providers actually have that. I currently Lotte is not using it, but it is a feature of the software that we selected should we decide to use it.
All right. I think if we have any more questions, we'll have to answer those and get back with you. But I think that's all we have for today. But if you'd like to learn more, you can go to www.antea.tech for more resources. Please visit our podcast. This will actually be a podcast. And if you missed our live stream last week, you can see it on YouTube. our Facebook page and also our LinkedIn page. All right. I appreciate everyone for joining us. Samuel, thank you for the short notice and us giving you a short notice since being here. And Justin, thank you so much for your view as a consultant. And we appreciate you guys being here with Antea. Hope this was very informative for everyone.
Definitely. No, this was a lot of fun. A lot of questions still that could be answered. And I think we'll try to jot those down and get back to everybody that has been asking those questions. And thank you, Angela. Good work moderating and keeping us going. And Samuel, always good to have a conversation back and forth. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Yes. And please remember, you can always send myself a direct message, Samuel a direct message, and also Justin. We are on LinkedIn. Thanks so much, guys.
Awesome. Thank you.